This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording early today, July 1st, since we have a long Independence Day weekend here in the U.S. and figure we'll cover the cover June and the first half of the year, and I guess the second quarter, as painful as that was.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough quarter here. We were talking about Pizza Friday, usually, you know, to celebrate the birthdays for the month, and I was reminded that the July 4th celebration of Independence Day is a prelude to that we celebrate your upcoming full rotation around the sun this Sunday. So happy birthday to you, or happy early birthday to you, Mr. Mayberry.
Thank you. It's usually my birthday is either a holiday or a half day. So, you know, if Independence Day is on a Tuesday or, you know, midweek, usually the day before is a half day. So it's always good to get out early so we can celebrate me.
Celebrate you and celebrate America. You know, your parents did a good job on the timing. So, or your mom did a good job. Let's say. I talked to dad at any, well, yeah, he did. But yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's get into where are we as we talk about pain.
All right. So all the numbers we'll be rattling off today are through June 30th. So for the month of June, the S&P 500 is down 8.3%. Tough quarter, as you mentioned. The second quarter of this 2022, the S&P 500 was down just over 16%. And going into the second half of the year, we start out on the wrong foot, down just about 20% in the first half of 2022. And looking across the scoreboard here, pretty much everything on the, you know, in during the month of June was in the red. The worst performer was the best performer for all each of the previous months leading up until then. The energy sector of the S&P 500 was down 16.9%. The best performer in June looks to be consumer staples, still down 2.4% for that month. And on the year, utilities is, well, let's see, the best performer is energy, down 31.8%. I'm so used to saying down.
Man, if the best performer was down 31.8%, that'd be a new definition of pain.
That's right. Well, it is still kind of pain because the best performer from energy is up 31.8%. We know that that contributes less than 5% of the index on, it could have grown a little bit, but the S&P 500 does rebalance quarterly. So it's usually right in the low single digits there for the contribution. But I say it's pain because the next best performer is a negative sign in front of it. That's utilities down 0.6% through the first half of the year. The worst performer is pretty much the opposite of energy, is down 32.5%, and that's consumer discretionary. So a whole lot of red across the scoreboard that encompasses the S&P 500. I will say that it's a pretty strong week-to-date performance from utilities, though, actually, through today. It put up it's up 3%, it looks like, so far on a week-to-date basis, pushing it into the green for the year-to-date. It's up, as of right now, 0.8% on the year to date through July 1st on that metric there. So it is one of two sectors of the S&P 500 that are positive alongside energy there. And then flipping it around, taking a look at some of the other broad-based indices for U.S. equities. We have the Russell 1000, the large caps within that space is up, is down 34%. And the Russell 2000 for the small caps are down just over 36% on the year to date through June 30th. And it looks like value continues to outperform growth here, but it still has a very strong negative look to it. It's down about 24% on the Russell 1000 value through June 30th, 2022. But growth is down more. It's down 43% on the year to date for the first half of 2022. So definitely a tough, tough 6 months for the S&P 500. And just kind of as some backdrop, reading the headlines today as a couple of the sell side research shops put out their 6 month review from the Goldman Sachs, it says that the US 60-40 retirement portfolio just logged its second worst start to the year going back to 1900. So 122 years, it says. It's, I'm not sure which indices they use there. It's not the S&P 500 and it's not the Bloomberg aggregate. So some type of proxy there, just, you know, on the way that they're calculating it. But that portfolio using whatever proxy up until the S&P 500 and the start date for the Barclays Ag was down 17%.
I thought they said that the only time worse was the Great Depression.
That's right. So that was in 1932. So that is what, about 1.5, maybe 2 years after the start of the Great Depression. And the market bottom was on July 8th per Goldman Sachs in the year of 1932. So pulling that up on Bloomberg on the price basis, it looks like through the first half of 1932, the S&P 500 was down 45.4%, but it did rally back a little bit in the second half of the year, ending the year of a total price return of 14.8. And I'm saying price return there because it's not, for some reason or another, the Bloomberg's not including dividends there. Either they weren't offered on the securities back then, or they just, Bloomberg doesn't have that data. So it is a price return of for 1932.
I could see either being valid, whether companies were hoarding cash just given the depressionary state they were in, or there is a data, you know, gap there.
Yeah. So, you know, looking at it right there, it's, you know, we're seeing that on a price return basis, the S&P 500, or so 2022 is the worst start of the year through June 30th, going back to 1970, if you're looking at price return, and going back to 1962, if you're looking at total return from that basis there. So either way, I would say 2022 counts as a pretty bad start to the year so far. We'll see what the second half has in store.
And that's only half of the 60-40 portfolio. So that's what about right. The other, what about the other, I guess not half, but what about the other 40%?
Yeah, so again, using a proxy here, this time from Deutsche Bank, they, you know, just kind of give some color before we dive into the numbers here. From Deutsche Bank, they say that their U.S. 10-year Treasury proxy index did indeed see the first worst half of the year going back to 1788. So I'm not sure what they're using before the 10-year Treasury note was issued in its current incarnation, but I think within that, it's safe to assume that this is also the worst year that for the 10-year Treasury as well, going back that during that period of time. So with that, looking across the yield curve here, the 2-year Treasury note ended June 30th, 2022, with a yield of 2.95%. That is up 2.22% over year end 2021. So quite a bit of movement, having started or ended 2021 with a yield of 0.73% to where we were yesterday at 2.95. And as you know, we've talked about throughout this year on undercurrents of M3, that can be attributed to the FOMC as the market was anticipating the Fed's monetary policy with regards to rate hikes. Similar.
Yeah, but I think, you know, beginning of the year, it was expectations were what we're expecting for, you know, a 25 basis point hikes once a quarter, something like that. And I think the was like, are we going to get 4 or 5 25 basis point hikes this year? That was the big discussion. And then all of a sudden it was like, we got 75 basis points in one meeting. So
yeah,
that just shows how rapidly the market's repriced and I guess you've seen that pain in the fixed income, on the fixed income side.
Yeah, and then to continue down the curve there, the 10-year Treasury yield ended June 30th with a yield of 3.01, up 150 basis points from D31 2021. And similarly, you saw the rise in the bond with 30-year Treasury bond closing out June 30th at a yield of 3.18%, up 1.28 from D31 2021. So definitely, some pain there for holders of fixed income as well, with the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate down 10.4% on through the first half of the year. It did negative 4.7 in the second quarter, and then in the month of June, it was down 1.6%. Looking across that, we've been previously talking about how the IG corporate credit index was, the by and far, far, far away the worst performer for the year. At that time, it was down, mid to maybe high double teens, I should say, not double digits, but teens there. Right now, through the first half of the year, IG corporate credit is still down in the mid teens. It's down 14.4%, but it looks like high yield side of it caught up pretty quickly over, and with a lot of negative moves over the last month as well as the last quarter there. But right now, high yield corporate credit is neck and neck in the negative performance with IG corporate credit. High yield corporate credit is down 14.2%. So pretty much there when we take a look at it. So we'll see what the rest of the year has in store for these two U.S. corporate credit sectors.
Yeah, I guess on the good side, though, with that price drop in prices, your yields are up a lot. So, 10-year or the Treasury index is yields above 3% now. Investment grade corporates are almost 4.75%. And then your high yield to no defaults is almost a 9 yield. So, while the it was some pain over the first half of the year, at least going forward, at least it looks a little bit more attractive from a yield standpoint.
Yeah, these are some multi-year highs that we're seeing. In some cases, you're seeing a decade type of high. But when you said almost 9% on the high yield corporate index, to me, first thing I thought is, hey, that might be a positive return, depending on how close you are to that 9. A positive real yield, sorry, not return, positive real yield on the high yield corporate credit index by a few basis points, So something to cheer about. Let's get some silver linings here, Jeff. But moving over to the commodity side, commodities have given up a lot over the past month. This in the month of June, it's down almost 11% on the Bloomberg Commodity Broad Basket of Commodities Index. There, it's still up 18% year to date. So it is one of the lone shining stars out there in investable assets when we take a look at it within this cohort that we review each week. But down almost 11% in June, down about 5.5% in the second quarter. So you are getting a bit of a slowdown that is, it seems to be pricing in some of this economic weakness that we've been and slowing that we've been talking about the past few weeks as well. So we'll see how that holds up in the coming months. And then finally, moving it over to Bitcoin here. Bitcoin ended December 31st. Actually, before we go in there, let's talk about oil there. It looks like oil started the year around the $75 mark today, or as of June 30th, it was just under $106 a barrel. So it was up 40.5% for the first half of the year. So with that, it also had a weak June, down 17.75% for that month using the front month futures contract there. And then finally, going down to Bitcoin, come bring it back here. Bitcoin ended 2021 in the 46,000 mark area there. And then it's as of June 30th, it was just under 19,000. So a 60% drop on that basis there, including, and most of it looks like it happened in this last quarter, as it was down about 59% in Q2. This last month has been a month of pain for Bitcoin. It was down 40% over that period. So a lot of it's a pretty steep roller coaster drop, I would say. I can't remember, in between it seems like it had a few plateaus there. It was bouncing around 20% or 20,000 for a while, but it's come down a little bit since then.
I think it still feels like there's a lot of headlines out there and in the crypto space and going to need a little bit more of a shakeout, I think, before people, your marginal buyer is going to get, you know, work itself back into the crypto space. Certainly yeah. the Bitcoin forever maximalists are still buying, but, you need that marginal guy to come in.
To come in and put some money to work. But we'll see if Bitcoin, it's come back from the depths before. So we'll see if it's able to do it again.
Yeah, and over the long term, it's still up a lot. From when it was pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, I remember when people were spending a couple Bitcoin to buy a pizza on one of those early transactions. So it's definitely come a long way from there. So
that's right. So.
That wrap up there of the markets, do you want to kick us off on what happened this past week in the macro land?
Yeah, on the macro front, on Monday, we got the durable goods orders. That's the May preliminary number that came in much stronger than expected, of 0.7% versus a 0.1% expectation. On Tuesday, we got the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index. That actually was higher than expectations. It came in at 1.9%. That brings the year-over-year number to 21.23%. So no slowdown. You've seen some anecdotes about home prices, more inventory coming out has yet to come in through the home price index. But then remember that this index is from April. So we haven't had that big run up there in mortgage rates there in April. So we'll see what the next month holds when we do get the May numbers. And then on Thursday, we got personal income and spending came out. This is also for May. The income number came in as expected, up 50 basis points, but spending surprised to the downside, only up 0.2%. Spending on durable goods fell 3.2% month over month, while services continued to be strong and was up 0.7%. So a little bit of a wobble there in terms of spending and whether the consumer continued to prop up the U.S. economy. On Thursday, we also got the PCE. So the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the core PCE came out as expected, at 0.3% month over month, 4.7% year over year. The headline number did come out a little bit month over month below expectations at 0.6%. That brought the year over year number to 6.3. Ryan Kimmel, one of our macro asset allocation analysts, said, it's a sign that core PCE has topped out for now. Whether we get another head fake or not, we'll see, but not really PCE, not really a market moving event because we have the CPI and the PPI have those numbers priced in already. So again, we didn't see too much movement there from the PCE numbers. And then this morning we did get the ISM manufacturing number for June, that fell below expectations at 53.0, was expected to come in at 54.5. So still expansionary, but from less expansionary. The quote from from that release said the U.S. manufacturing sector continues to be powered, though less so in June, by demand while held back by supply chain constraints. So the similar story that we've had kind of so far this year. Kind of surprisingly, the new orders portion of the report fell below the 50 mark to 49.2. That's the first time that this portion of the index has dropped below 50 since the COVID recession of 2020. So a little bit of a wobble there. I think I was talking to someone yesterday and said, depending on whether you're bullish or bearish, there's a lot of data points out there that you can focus on or point to one way or the other, depending on what side of the story you want. So it feels like we're kind of in a cuspy area where some of the data is going to shake out negative, some of the data is going to shake out positive, and kind of in a wait and see approach.
Yeah, definitely have to look at all these economic indicators and in some sort of aggregate to get a better sense. But the isms do, for those of us that look at the isms with regards to what it might mean or reflect on the U.S. economy, the isms do have periods where they do drop in the contraction when the National Bureau of Economic Research doesn't declare an official recession. So it does drop below 50 every now and again, but it is one of those things that we look at. It does point to weakness, but whether or not it's enough to be a sign of recession doesn't seem like a yes there.
Yeah, but one of the things people are pointing to as a recessionary indicator is that the GDP, Atlanta Fed's GDP now came out. It was zero, which was a bit big news, kind of could obviously go either way from there. came out to a positive 0.3, and then the most recent update went to a negative 1.0. So if that continues, and we got a negative one, and remember from the first quarter, we got a negative 1.6 GDP number. So if you go by the old technical terms of when a recession happens, two negative quarters is a recession. So if that GDP now number comes to fruition, then we would be looking at a recession.
Technical recession on that level, the two back
technical recession. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we got to watch and see how the employment data looks like as it comes out next week, because I tend to look at those hand in hand when we're thinking about recessions, you know, having a weaker economy, but if the employment market is still holding in pretty strongly, which I'm not saying it will, but if it does, then perhaps that's what people refer to as that kind of soft recession, and maybe the NBR doesn't pull that trigger in calling it a recession. But I will say that that negative one that GDP now came out yesterday, it looks like the print, probably off of these ISM numbers that just came out, just got updated for today. And it went from negative one as of yesterday down to negative two today with this most recent update that came hot off the press while we're talking.
All right. And remember, we used to have a chart that showed that a recession, you know, the official start of the recession happens when unemployment rises above its four or five year moving average of unemployment rate. That's a pretty long term trend there. And so we haven't seen, as I'll get to in a second, we haven't seen that unemployment number rise recently. So we're still at a very low level, but because we've been at this low level for a little bit of a while now, that moving average is coming down. But we would need to see an uptick in unemployment before a recession kind of would officially be started.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good point. With a lot of good economic indicators that we look at, that's been created by, you know, Ryan Kimmel and the rest of the macro asset team there, that they put out for us. So as those things start to trigger or get close, we'll be sure to let our listeners know how we're seeing it and what we're looking at there. But since you teed it up with the next week's jobs number, do you want to kick us off on things to keep an eye on for next week? Looks like a pretty busy week.
It should be a pretty busy week. It's first week of the month. On Tuesday, we do get the durable goods, the May final number. And if you remember from a couple minutes ago, I said we got the May preliminary number. And, in a week, the finalized number is expected to be the same as the preliminary. So it seems kind of crazy that they do both of them. But, they want to get that early look out. On Wednesday, we do get the S&P Global Services PMI. That number is expected to come in at 51.6, so still an expansionary phase there. We do get the ISM services number on the same day, 54.5 is that expectation, so a little bit stronger from the ISM over the formerly known as a market with an I number. Then we do get the JOLTS job openings number, and that number is expected to come in at 11 million, down from 11.4 million last month, so a little bit of a slowing on the job openings front, which is something that Chair Powell has been focused on when he does look at the job openings per unemployed person. Wednesday, we also get the Fed meeting minutes, not really expecting any fireworks from that. And then on Friday is Pizza Friday. We do get the non-farm payroll number. That number is expected to come in at 275,000. It was a very strong 390,000 last month. A 275 number, I would expect, would not be considered. It would be considered to be maybe a slowing labor market, but still a very strong labor market. So I don't think that if the number comes in there, that the Fed would ease off the gas pedal, or I guess ease off the brakes, since they're trying to slow down. They wouldn't ease off the brakes if the NFP came in at 275,000. And then we also get, since it is Pizza Friday, we do get the unemployment number. That's expected to, the U3 unemployment is expected to come in at 3.6%, flat versus last month. And the labor force participation rate also flat versus last month at 62.3. So really haven't seen the effects, at least the expectations are, we haven't seen any effects of a slowdown in the labor market. And so the Fed can continue to hike rates into this strong labor market.
Yeah, I guess we'll be keeping an eye on those two. I mean, like you said, just really keeping an eye on that JOLTS job openings relative to the number of unemployed, and see if if Powell, I mean, that's the part where Powell's talking about the excess demand in the labor market. Hopefully it'll come from the reduced job openings rather than more from the unemployed side. But I guess any kind of surprises there with the U3 rate and the jobs data could be a market moving event given that those parameters.
Yeah, so a short week, but a busy week next week.
That's right. That's right. Hopefully everyone gets to enjoy their long weekend here.
Yeah. I guess, you know, that leads us right into the end there. So I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in this week on Monday Morning Minutes.
Yeah. Thanks for everyone for listening to us out there today, Monday Morning Minutes. You can pick us up each Monday before the bell. And if you're unable to find us on your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and hit us up with an email at minutes@doubleline.com. Or you can hit us up on the Twitter at D-Line Minutes and shoot us any questions, comments, or suggestions that you may have.
Yeah, and don't forget, you can find more information about DoubleLine at our website, doubleline.com. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. And Sam's other podcast, The Sherman Show, just dropped a new episode, which I highly recommend everyone check out. You can follow them on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Again, hope everyone has a great long weekend, at least here in the U.S. And then we go into a long drought in holidays in the U.S. where we don't get another holiday for 2 months until Labor Day. So enjoy this weekend while we can.
Yeah, that's right. But thanks, everyone, and good luck out there.
This audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by the listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person or a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Securities mentioned are not a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell. These securities were chosen based on their active overweights within the representative portfolio to explain portfolio positioning and the forward-looking view of the market that drives such positioning. For the preceding year, beginning August 24th, 2021, a list of all positions is available by request at media@doubleline.com. Equities may decline in value due to both real and perceived general market, economic, and industry conditions.